Welcome back to Radio Physics, a collaboration with the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Community Radio in Carbondale, and physics students from local high schools and beyond. Interns spend 2 weeks working at the center during the summer, and we'll get to talk one-on-one with some of the prominent physicists who are here. I'm Marisa Walbert, and I'm hosting today's episode, which is being recorded here at the Aspen Center for Physics. Our interns today are Jack Kravitz, a rising senior at Aspen High School, and Sasha Fielder, who is a rising senior at Colorado Rocky Mountain School in Carbondale, Colorado. Take it away.
Hi, Ryan. I guess we'll start off with, what is your work? You're in astrophysics, but what exactly do you do within that field?
Yeah, so within astrophysics, I work on astrophysical transients. These are different sources in the sky that have variability on a human time scale, so things that change over minutes, hours, weeks, days, years. And those are usually exploding stars, but there's a variety of other things that can happen. Unlike things like galaxies that look essentially the same throughout your entire lifetime, these are the things that really can change day to day. And exploding stars are particularly interesting for a vast number of subfields within astrophysics. And it's everything from they produce all of the heavy elements. So when you think about the iron in your blood, the calcium in your bones, those come from exploding stars. They are the end life of stars, and they can produce compact objects, things like neutron stars and black holes. They're used to measure distances, and that's how we were able to first discover the majority of the universe, this thing called dark energy. And that was only discovered about 30 years ago. So it's a very wide field that has a lot of impact on astronomy.
Kind of just getting right into it, I'm super interested in kind of the big discovery you and your team made in 2017 about the neutron star merger. And for someone who's has no idea what that is, with people at home, I know a little bit, but how would you describe like what your team discovered and like why it's such a big deal for science and astrophysics as a field?
Yeah, well, why don't we step back, because not everybody knows what a neutron star
is.
Yeah,
exactly.
So a neutron star is the densest kind of matter in the universe other than a black hole. So it's effectively one giant atom just made up of neutrons. Neutrons are these subatomic particles. They're similar to protons but have no electric charge. So they're the result of the collapse of the core of a massive star. That process also produces a supernova. So a neutron star has the mass of about the sun, a little bit more usually, and it's the size of a city. So you can take the sun's mass and compress it down into something like, you know, San Francisco, near where I am, and that's what you have for a neutron star. Another way to think about this is if you just took a bucket and scooped up a bucket of neutron star material, that has as much mass as all of Mount Everest. It's incredibly dense.
Yeah.
They're very weird objects. And so people have been studying them now for decades. There have been several Nobel Prizes awarded for studying neutron stars. And recently, people have been very excited because when two of them are gravitationally bound to each other, orbiting each other, they're spinning around each other, that process will produce gravitational waves. Gravitational waves are similar to electromagnetic waves, light, except electromagnetic waves, they work with the electromagnetic force, electricity and magnetism. Gravitational waves work with gravity. So whenever you have a massive object moving around, it produces gravitational waves. If you just stood up and started doing some jumping jacks, you would produce gravitational waves. Very, very small. Neutron stars, because they're so massive and dense, if you have two of them together, when they're orbiting each other, they'll emit relatively large amounts of gravitational waves. Those gravitational waves take energy away, just like light is energy, And so the orbit between these two stars, it gets closer and closer until eventually these two neutron stars can merge. In that process, it produces enough gravitational waves, it's strong enough that we can detect those gravitational waves with these really advanced facilities on Earth. So this has only been done measuring gravitational waves for about a decade now. It's a very new scientific field. But neutron stars are particularly interesting for this. This system is very extreme. If you're thinking about, again, something the size of the city, the mass of the sun, two of those things orbiting around each other, right before they merge, they're orbiting around each other every few seconds, and they're going about a third the speed of light in their orbit as they come together. So the first detection of gravitational waves was done by two black holes that came together. But black holes, even though there's mass there, there's no expectation that they would produce any light. They're black.
Yeah.
So neutron stars are particularly interesting because when they merge, even though they might make a black hole, there's material there and light can get out. So for a long time now, people have been thinking that these merging neutron stars should produce some sort of explosion that we could see in light, and at the same time, that process of merging we could see in gravitational waves. So in 2017, the LIGO detectors, these gravitational wave facilities, they detected a signal, and all indications were that it came from two neutron stars that had merged, the first time that had ever been seen in gravitational waves. And so everybody in the world who knew about it was very excited to look for the light. My team was part of that, and we started as soon as we can looking for the light. We used a number of telescopes, but the one we were using the most is this small 1 meter diameter mirror telescope, as small for professional astronomers.
Yeah.
It's called the SWOPE telescope. It's at the Las Campanas Observatory in Chile. And we started observing as soon as we could. We had to wait for the sun to set. And once we had that, we started looking around in the area that we thought there might be some of this light. And very quickly, we were able to find a point of light that we thought could be associated with this neutron star merger. We announced it to the world. We were the first to take a picture of it. We were the first to announce it. So that was very fun, and of course the next several months were just kind of chaotic in how much work we had to do because of it.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, first time it was ever seen, but what did it sort of mean for the field, if you sort of get what I'm getting at? Like, why was it important?
Yeah, there are a number of reasons why. Just in general, you should be thinking about how do you observe the universe. Almost everything we know about the universe is through light. Occasionally we'll send some little robot to Mars or something like that, but almost everything that we know about the universe is because we are able to see it through light. And just recently we've had this additional capability, a different way to use the universe, in the same way that you can look with your eyes out to the world. And then imagine all of a sudden you were able to hear things as well. So just having those different perspectives on the same object makes it so that you can really see the full picture. We're talking about these two neutron stars merging. You could imagine it's like a car crash, two cars running into each other. If you just saw it, you would get a sense of what was going on. But if you saw and heard it, then you would know a lot more about that situation. So to just start off, that was the first time we were ever able to combine these two different ways of looking at the universe, and through that we just learned a whole bunch. But because this was such a unique situation, we learned so much more. So first of all, I talked about these gravitational waves. So this is something that comes directly out of Einstein's theory of general relativity, that there should be these gravitational waves. And one of the things that theory of gravity, which might not be right, a lot of people are trying to prove Einstein wrong, but one of the predictions is that gravitational waves were moving at the speed of light. They could be moving slower, but because of this observation, the gravitational waves, they were moving for about 120 million years, and the light was also moving for about 120 million years before we detected it at Earth. And because they were detected so close together, we can say, oh, we know that light and gravitational waves were moving at essentially the same speed. And that was able to rule out a bunch of these alternative theories for gravity. That's one thing. The thing that I think is particularly interesting about this is we have, since the 50s, had an idea of how you make the heaviest elements. So things on the bottom half of the periodic table, things like gold, silver, uranium, all those sorts of things. But we didn't actually know where that happened. We knew the process of doing that, but we didn't know where. And so the process is particularly hard. You need to have a situation where you have a very dense matter, you have it heat up really hot, but you also need a whole bunch of neutrons. And so maybe not surprisingly, merging neutron stars was an obvious place where people thought it could happen. But our observations showed that it did happen, that those really heavy elements were produced in this explosion. And so this, for the first time, we have direct confirmation of where these heavy elements, including things like gold, were produced. So earlier I was saying, you know, when you think about the iron in your blood or the calcium in your bones, that comes from exploding stars. That's true. But now when you look at like your gold wedding ring, or maybe some people have gold fillings or something like that, the different interesting elements in your phone, there's all sorts of gold and platinum and things like that in your phone. Or even when you're thinking about nuclear reactors and that, where, like, where do you get the uranium? All of that came from merging neutron stars.
Wow. That's a big discovery. Super cool to see how this one event that you guys detected by like seeing the light basically has like opened up and like made us realize all these things about the universe and how we interpret it. And is there any way that now our more known sense of gravitational waves and light moving at basically the same speed, what does that have to do with like the notion of the ever-expanding universe and trying to see more beyond that?
That's a really good question. So I'll first say that since 2017, when we made this discovery, we've been looking for more of these events, and we haven't found one yet. Yeah. So there have been a few times where the gravitational wave detectors have found these merging neutron star systems, but we haven't been able to find the light associated with it. And that's because you sometimes have to search over like a quarter of the sky.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, it's in a position where the sun is right there. And, you know, so us astronomers using our telescopes, we can't see when the sun's in the way. We have to wait for the Earth to move in its orbit before we can see that part of the sky. So we haven't been able to do that in the last 8 years. Which, of course, is a little frustrating for people like me, because I'm really excited to see the next thing and build on our success. But it also makes it so that it's harder to produce more advanced theories.
Yeah.
You know, this is all about science. Like, you want a theory to be out there, and then you test it with experiment or observation, and then that experiment or observation produces information that you can then either reject a theory or improve a theory. And so we're waiting for that next event. But you said something very interesting about how the universe is expanding and how we can test that. So these gravitational wave sources are a particularly interesting source for understanding the expansion of the universe. And this gets a little technical, but basically, when we are trying to measure how fast the universe is expanding, we have to do this thing where we measure things that are very near us, and then using those things that are very near us, we can then calibrate things that are very rare, maybe a little bit brighter though, and then we can step outward further and further in distance until eventually we can measure that expansion. This is something that, you know, a lot of people do, where you might have a tape measure and you say, all right, now I know roughly how big a person is, and then you see a person on the horizon, and you say, oh, I can guess how big that tree is, and then you look at trees and you say, all right, from those trees I can say how big is that building, those sorts of things. So it's the same basic idea. Yeah. But for these gravitational wave sources, you can measure the distance exactly without any of that.
Oh, wow.
So again, we've only had one, but yeah, it has given us a direct measurement of the expansion rate of the universe. So it's still something that we need more events to get a very precise answer. But so far, what we have been able to measure is very interesting. It's a new way to do this, and it can potentially one day be the best way to measure how the universe is expanding.
Wow, yeah. So you mentioned you're like trying to look for this new event. Like, what are you doing right now? What, you have any current research that, like, what's your next big thing, kind of, that in this field specifically?
Yeah, so the issue is that we need to do it where you see both the gravity and the light. You need the gravitational wave detectors to detect something.
Yeah.
And they are extremely advanced facilities. They can measure the distance. They have these detectors separated by 4 kilometers that they're measuring the distance of that 4 kilometers. And they can measure it to 1/1000th the size of a proton.
Oh, wow.
That's the precision that they are able to measure that distance. So they're really incredible instruments. But they're constantly trying to improve that. And so there have been stretches of years where they've shut down the detectors completely so that they can undergo these upgrades. And as a result, during those periods, we didn't have any gravitational wave detectors online. We couldn't see the gravity from any event like this. Now, we're not gonna just sit around and wait, so we are constantly looking with optical telescopes to try to find these events as well. It's just the gravitational wave events, these emerging neutron stars, they're very difficult to observe. They fade very quickly. They're not particularly bright to begin with. They become very red very quickly. And so it's hard for somebody with just an optical telescope to find them, but we are trying. But so far, we haven't found a good second one.
Yeah, I guess I would, when you're looking for the light there, like, how big in the sky is it? Is it the size of a star that you would generally see? And also kind of building on that, how do you compare what you're looking for to the night sky? Is it through some comparison program where you're like, oh, that light wasn't there before? Or how do you identify that it's a source of light?
Yeah, so everything that's really far away from us, stars and that they start to look like points. You can't resolve it. You know that it's there, but you can't resolve it. In the same way when maybe you're seeing a lighthouse very far away, you can see a point of light, but you can't actually see the size of the light bulb. And so that's how most stars and things like that are seen. And so for us, it looks like another star. And so, yeah, how do you distinguish that star from anything else? Well,
or how do you know that it's new from this event?
Exactly. So while most astronomers, they're taking photographs, they're taking pictures of the sky, we make movies. So we are cosmic cinematographers, and we're looking night after night and looking at the same parts of the sky and seeing if there's anything new. So you compare from one image to another, and you say, do I see something new? And of course, there's some very sophisticated software and mathematics behind how do you determine if something is new or not. But basically, you can, with your eye, just look at two images and say, is that new or not?
Yeah, I was going to say a controversial topic, but like, is AI coming into that where it just is much quicker than a human or something else at just seeing the same thing it's seen over and over and saying, this is what you've changed?
Yeah, so astronomy has been on the forefront of AI for a very long time, and so for more than a decade, we've used AI to detect these sources. The amount of imaging data that we have is really too much for individuals to go through everything. So we do use AI to say this is a likely source, or this is just, you know, some artifact in the data. Maybe it's an asteroid or something like that. We can detect those through AI and say, all right, we're going to push these into a category where no human needs to look, and then the things that look really good, humans still, with their eyeballs, say, does this look right?
So another question I have is, so obviously you guys observed two neutron stars merging, and obviously pretty recently we've had the first few real pictures of black holes. Well, I mean, not a real picture because you can't see the light in a black hole, but like you can see the hole, see that there's no light there.
Everything around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Have you guys, like with black holes or any of that, have you seen any maybe neutron stars and black holes merging? Or is there a way that you're trying to detect anything with black holes or like what that's saying about the universe?
Yeah, these are great questions. So in gravitational waves, we've seen both neutron stars merge with black holes and black holes merge with black holes. And for neutron stars merging with black holes, you could also still see light because there's still that neutron star. It's got matter. And what matters for if you can see it or not is if the neutron star gets ripped apart through tidal forces, either inside or outside of the event horizon.
Yeah.
And if it's inside the event horizon, if the neutron star just goes inside the event horizon and then gets ripped apart, we won't see anything. You know, nothing comes back. But if it gets ripped apart outside of the event horizon, then we have a chance to see it. So we've been looking, but so far no system has been, you know, very obviously going to have light.
Yeah.
For two black holes that are coming together, you still need matter outside of the event horizon to see some light. And the images that you've seen, the shadow of a black hole, they're, you know, incredible images. But those are from these really, really big black holes at the centers of galaxies. So one of them is about a billion times the mass of our sun. So just enormous. And for those black holes, they often will have a lot of material around them, but our current gravitational wave detectors can't detect those merging.
Yeah, okay.
We have plans to do that, but it requires putting detectors in space.
Yeah.
So the ones that we are seeing are much smaller. They're you know, something like 10 to 100 times the mass of our sun. Still big. But there have been a lot of ideas about how you might see some light from those, depending on if they have material around or maybe they're in a particularly interesting environment. But again, so far there have been no great candidates of seeing light with one of those.
I guess sort of from a personal angle, just kind of obviously being interested in physics and going into college and such, like, my question would just be, how did you figure out that astrophysics, or even physics, because science is such a big umbrella, and then even within physics itself, there's so many subtopics. Just how did you decide what you were interested in and what?
Yeah, that's a great question, because my path is not the typical path. I don't come from a family that has a scientific background. My father was a furniture designer and artist, and my mother was a dental hygienist and then a real estate broker. So I wasn't in the same track as some other people, my colleagues, where their parents were physicists. So I had to kind of find my own way, but I always liked math. So I was really interested in that and did as much of that as I could. I thought math was just such an interesting, elegant way of seeing the world, where you have these very basic rules and all this emergent phenomenology that comes out of that. And so for me, I thought that was really interesting. When I went to college, I was pursuing math. I got really deep in the weeds. And it was fun, but I took an astronomy course at some point, and I just really enjoyed every aspect of it. And I was really good at it. Like, it just sort of clicked for me. So not until my junior year in college was I like, oh, I want to be an astronomer. And I think ultimately, yeah, you know, it's nice when you're able to feel like something is enjoyable and relatively easy at the time. It's gotten much harder as I go along. But it's also just when I thought about it, I was like, you know, I could study math or other kinds of physics. And I said, well, why astronomy? Well, to me, it has the absolute best questions. It's like things that, like, how old is the universe? We can answer that. Such a fundamental question. Like, how long has the universe been around? And we know. There are all sorts of other extremely interesting questions, like, is there life in the universe? Now, how did we as people come about? Where did the Earth come from? Why, you know, do we have all these elements that are around on Earth so that life can happen? These are things that you know, you can answer by looking up in the sky. And I find that to just be incredible. And while, you know, I really did enjoy my equations in mathematics, at some level, I didn't get that same feeling of wonder that I get every single time I go to a telescope. What I'll say is that even though you have to know the math, you have to know the equations, the day-to-day is just solving problems. It's the same kind of things that a lot of other people do in their jobs. You have a problem in front of you, you have to figure out the best way to solve it. And yeah, sometimes that means an equation, but oftentimes it's just having the right idea. Thank you.